Okay, so everyone who fully understands every aspect of the European debt crisis, raise your hand. All right, well, there's one being raised in the studio, and it's our guest, because with debates over austerity, growth, that new word, Grexit, meaning the strong possibility that Greece might exit the eurozone, let's face it, some of us have never really understood the euro, which only formally replaced European currencies in 2002, and Greece is now talking about going back to the drachma. Can they do that? Would that be like Alabama deciding to trade in tobacco leaves, or Texas going back to star money and redbacks? We have questions. We want to hear yours about the euro crisis. Send them to hereandnow.org. You can tweet to @hereandnow or go to facebook.com/hereandnowradio. Because today, our irregular segment, No Question, Too Stupid to Ask, our guest, economist Richard Parker, professor of public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School. He also served as advisor to the Greek government that preceded the one that was just in elections. We'll, you know, catch up on that as well. But Richard, how did we get to this? Because critics of Greece are saying, you know, they were spending like drunkards for decades before the government in 2009 that you worked with that tried to do some reform. And there was a regulating mechanism in the euro, the Eurostat, that yokes all these countries together. So shouldn't people have seen Greece's overspending?
So here's part of the problem, which is when narratives get lodged in the public mind and they're amplified by the media, they take on a life of their own. Let me just share a few facts with you. First of all, the OECD shows the share of GDP paid in taxes by all the member countries. Greece pays roughly a third of its GDP in taxes. That's more than Americans pay as a share of GDP in taxes in this country. We've heard for years about them not paying their taxes. That's not the story. The story is that there is heavy tax evasion on income tax, both at the personal and corporate level, but the Greeks collect an enormous amount of money relative to the size of their economy through value-added taxes, which are kind of like a sales tax, through excise taxes on gasoline and alcohol and cigarettes, and on Social Security taxes. And European Social Security taxes take closer to 15 to 20% of a paycheck rather than the 6% that we do here
in
the U.S.
But this is the, you know, the people, the taxes that people were spending. We hadn't even gotten to that yet. But the accusation is that the government was spending money, in fact, cooking its books.
Yeah. So, again, both of those need to be revisited. One way to revisit the recklessness of the Greek government is to look at the debt to GDP ratio. And what you see is that the debt to GDP ratio of Greece from the mid-1990s up to 2007 was flat. That is, the debt of the government was not growing faster than the economy was growing. And the Greek economy was the fastest growing in Europe.
So what happened?
Well, what happened was that Greece turned out to be roadkill as a consequence of the meltdown of American markets in 2007, 2008, and 2009, and the spread of that American disaster onto Europe. Because what happened was that old and easy ways to make money, like collateralized debt obligations, suddenly became an impossible source of future funds. And now you had to find new ways to make money. And one of them was the realization that Greece was a vulnerable economy because of its size compared to Germany. And it was only 2% of the European market. And so savvy hedge fund traders went after them.
Okay. But I still have to keep you on this one point.
Sure.
Didn't Greece cook the books? I mean, we're seeing that this Eurostat, which is charged with keeping an eye on the regulations. I mean, Europe had requirements. You had to have only a certain amount of debt. And Eurostat was charged with keeping track of these statistics. And they couldn't because we understand at one point Greece officials left off the military expenditures. Another time, billions in hospital debt.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we haven't got the time to go through this. I can go through every single one of these because I had to look at it in order to work on projections for the Greek economy. What was happening was, yes, there were defects in the ways that records were being kept. There was a big showdown in, I think, 2003, 2004, and Eurostat broadly came away satisfied after 2004 that things had been cleaned up. The military issue was, do you book the cost of a new weapon system at the time you place the order, or when you actually receive the components? In other words, it's a question of a cash flow versus a cumulative measure of the cost of the weapons.
Well, so you're saying that it was more of a
What I'm trying to say is that
bookkeeping.
Here's what I'm trying to say, which is, it's really easy to single out the Greeks and say they were like five standard deviations away from normal behavior, and they brought this all on themselves. That's a very convenient way of not acknowledging that we're all in this mess together, and that a great deal of the cause of the mess in Europe came from the deregulation of finance here in the United States over the last 30 years.
Well, and we know that Spain, Ireland, Portugal are also in trouble. But the point is that Greece is the one that was failing. Other European countries make a deal to save it, only if Greece has these incredible austerity cuts, raising retirement age, imposing sharp pay cuts on public sector workers. What's been the effect economically and politically?
Two things. One is that the economy has contracted faster than the IMF or the EU thought it would, and we can talk about why that happened. The second is that politically, as you can imagine, in an economy that has over 20% unemployment, there's an enormous amount of popular frustration. It's frustration with the Greek government, and it's frustration with the European bankers, the so-called troika of the IMF, the European Central Bank, and the European Community.
The economy in Greece has gotten worse.
Yeah, it continues to get worse.
Economist Richard Parker of Harvard's Kennedy School. We were just talking about the austerity program undertaken by Greece under orders from other countries in Europe who are willing to help the country out and paying back its lenders, but only if Greece took real tough cuts in its paying to public workers, for instance. Some are saying that didn't work. And we're hearing now, Richard, about spending. In fact, today, a leading analyst group is warning that Europe risks falling into a severe recession. You know, its economy is going backwards if something isn't done to promote growth. Where does that money come from?
It comes from borrowing. This is the essence of what Keynesian economics created as a revolution in the 1930s. And in the last 30 years, with the rise of Reaganomics to the center of public discourse, we've forgotten these lessons. Paul Krugman has been very helpful in trying to hammer home the point that you reach in a depression where private investors are no longer willing to invest. The government has to step up, borrow money, and put people to work. That's the essence of Keynesianism, to restart the economy. What happened was that we've ignored those lessons because fundamentally conservative governments were in power in Berlin, conservative governments were in power in Paris and in London, and they did not like going down the Keynesian path. So they said, let's try austerity, and they couldn't show you where it had worked.
Well, yeah,
and so we got a natural experiment all over again that shows you that it doesn't work.
Well, you point to a time in history, 1937, you've been here before to talk about that, when it didn't work.
Yeah, no, I mean, the precedent is that Roosevelt was convinced by his Treasury Secretary after the 1936 elections to start cutting back the government deficit to return to the sound money ideas of the Republican Party then. And it pushed the country right back into a deep recession within the middle of the Depression.
Well, but you know the arguments against stimulus. I'll just tick through some. It can cause inflation. Governments can't wisely make economic choices. It's pork laden. And then, you know, the question that keeps coming, where does the money come from?
So, okay. On the first, the idea that it would cause inflation, you'd have to show me evidence that there's any risk of inflation. We have record low interest rates, and the first rule that an economist tells you is that a sign of rising inflation fears is a rising interest rate. So no evidence whatsoever to support the inflation claim. The second is that government screws up about as often as corporations do, and if we think that the private financial sector is to be trusted, great. I'll vote against you, but you run for it.
Yeah.
I don't think the last 5 years have convinced the Americans that deregulating finance was such a smart idea.
But what about the people in Europe? We have here, we've seen the outrage on the streets of Greece, but we're also hearing, I mean, we have just anecdotally a colleague who has relatives in Belgium screaming, why should I bail out Greece? What about that notion? I mean, were we going to see the opposite protests on the streets of the countries that have to do the loaning?
Look, this is an issue of localism that the United States has faced before, and because it's more federalized than Europe, it resolves by doing this at the Washington level. If we were still under the Articles of Confederation and Rhode Island had to loan money to Virginia, you'd be hearing the same thing. These are the agonies of local people thinking from a local position, but not about the health of the whole. The virtue of the federal system of the United States is that it has this unified central mechanism for making those transfers that have allowed the country to grow much more evenly. That's what Europe is now moving toward albeit in a raggedy way. But, you know, the whole process of European integration since the Second World War has been raggedy.
You know, it's funny. We heard some people saying this morning, just kind of as we were trying to think this out. Well, don't some states here in the United States subsidize other states that are poorer?
Massachusetts subsidizes much of the South of the United States.
Okay, we'll hear from our friends in the South. But here are some questions, meanwhile, that we're getting from people on Facebook, for instance. Philip Acebo writes, we were planning on retiring in Spain in 2 years. Is that a good or bad idea?
It's a good idea, but I'd probably keep my Social Security checks coming in dollars and not immediately convert them into pesetas. We don't know how these currencies are going to settle out. I'm sorry, in euros.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, sorry about that. That we don't know how these currencies are going to settle out over the next 2 years.
Well, but what happens if Greece does leave? I mean, because of all the exit clauses of the euro, they'd have to leave the European Union. Can they really function
there there's no provision in the treaties that created the euro for anybody to leave, so they're going to have to wing it. If they intend to leave.
And can they be on the drachma and, you know, a traveler from the U.S. coming with euros going through Greece?
Well, if you're a vacationer from the United States and Greece goes to the drachma, it's going to be a lot cheaper to go vacation on Crete than it is to vacation in Mallorca. There's no question about it. But here's what the Greeks face. They import all of their petroleum. They import all of their vehicles. They import 30% of their food. And the drachma is going to crash by 50 to 75% immediately after they leave the euro, which means that if it crashes 50%, oil's going to be twice as expensive, cars are going to be twice as expensive, and the portion of food that they import is going to be twice as expensive. The cost in terms of daily life and the immediate health of the economy is really going to be savage. And the theory economists have is that you increase exports. Greece does not have that much that it can really ramp up to export that is going to close the gap very quickly.
Another question from our website, Quincy writes, I've heard the size of the entire Greek economy is roughly about that of New York City. How can this be that big a problem for Europe? Haven't we, you know, made rescues like this before?
That's a terrific question. And again, it goes back to this federal situation in the United States versus the non-federal system of Europe. What you got was essentially in the reaction to Greece, the same reaction that the Ford administration had initially to New York City's bankruptcy in the 1970s, which was, as that headline said, drop dead New York City. Mm-hmm. But what happened was the federal government then did rally. And with Roatan and wise advice from New York bankers, you got New York City back and going again. What's happened is that because you've cobbled together coalitions of the more powerful countries, and they in turn have been worried not just about Greece but about their own banks, nobody has come forward with a clear, simple plan early on that would solve this problem, and that's what's needed.
Richard Parker of Harvard's Kennedy School. I want to get one last one in here from Kim Scott, again on our Facebook wall. We're planning to move to France in the next 6 months and buy a home. Can we expect the euro to dollar rate to drop any lower?
You can expect it to fluctuate. You should have bought the house in France in the Mitterrand years when the ratio was about 8-1.
Yeah, but...
Too late.
All right. Richard Parker of Harvard's Kennedy School. Hope we got some of your questions answered. Boy, it just flies. We will have to do this again.
No more fun than the euro crisis.
Thanks so much, Richard.
Nice to be here.